On Community Connections, it's time for this week's star interview.
Our first star guest of 2026 is one of my all-time favourite television presenters, and I suspect yours too. Whether appearing with Morecambe and Wise, trying to keep Larry Grayson in order, or presenting Songs of Praise, Isla St Clair holds a special place in UK television history. Isla's also an established singer and has also just launched her most recent album. It's called Kid Stuff. It really is a locker full of childhood gems. And as part of that launch, I'm very pleased to say that Isla is joining us on the programme today. Isla St Clair, welcome to Community Connections.
Hello. Yes, lovely to be here.
That's a voice from my childhood, sitting on the sofa on a Saturday evening. Before we come on to the rest of your life, let's start with that. How did Larry Grayson and the Generation Game fall into your lap?
Complete surprise. Absolute surprise. Almost a shock, really. I was just busily doing a variety of tours. I've been singing since childhood, early childhood. I mean, I began with the BBC, believe it or not. My first contract was March 1965. Eeks!
Wow!
I was 12 years old.
Yeah.
And I was asked to sing a traditional ballad on a programme called Talk of the North, and to speak about the folk music in schools.
Mm-hmm.
We're still trying. We're still trying. But anyway, I did that, and that led to many, many other television and radio shows through my teenage years, which was great. And then this led on to I left school as quickly as I possibly could and scooted off down to Edinburgh and got into the folk scene. You see, I thought everybody was in the folk scene, but no, it was only a handful of people, actually. But to me, it was the whole world. And I was in this area of work and loved the songs, I still do. And then I would tour a lot, so I went to Europe a lot, and I went to America, the Soviet Union, and America, and all over the place. And then, actually, I was getting a wee bit tired of the travelling, because it's always out of a suitcase, a day here, a day there. Lucky if you get a few days somewhere. And thought to myself, right, okay, what can I do about this? And I was well known on Scottish television. I'd done lots of series like Welcome to the Cayley and Thingamajigs and you name it. So I was not maybe as well known as Andy Stewart, if you remember him, but I was pretty well known there. So I thought, well, I shall go along to STV and I'll ask them if they could give me a job as a continuity announcer. I thought this would solve my problem, so I could stay at home, nip up there, do continuity announcing, and have what appeared to be a normal life. So met one of the Hygieians there, important people, and he said, your personality just wouldn't suit at all. He said, but I have another series for you. This was a series called Birthday Honours. And this time they wanted me just to interview people and not to be singing on it, which I almost said no to. I thought, they're not always singing, I'm not going to do it. And then the bank manager, I remembered. So I thought, okay, well, I'll do it then. So I did it, and it was interesting. They brought a lot of people from London up to Glasgow, to an outside venue there, and I would interview them all, and they were all a variety of people that from that era and from that time. We're talking now, 77 maybe. Anyway, did all this, and unbeknownst to me, at that very same time, the director of the Generation Game was in Edinburgh visiting his sick father. He turned on the telly, and they'd been looking for a sidekick, if you like, a co-host for a programme called The Generation Game with a camp comic they wanted to introduce into a family audience scenario. And he saw me, and that was it. Basically, he thought, that's it, that's the right one. It would not have entered my head to apply for it at all. And then I was asked to go down for an interview, and I got The Generation Game.
The choice of Larry Grayson was actually very far ahead of its time when you think about it. And you and he, from the kickoff, seemed to have this wonderful relationship that I must admit, I thought you'd known each other for years before.
Not at all. I didn't even know of him, and he certainly didn't know of me. We were strangers to each other when we first met. But think because we're so very different, he was absolutely, totally immersed in show business and all of that. And I knew enough of it to have met a number of people quite like Larry in their style and their, you know, sort of camp presentation and so on. And it was fun. I liked it all. It was great. And he was such a nice guy. As you saw him, he was more or less like that all the time. It was good fun. And any sadnesses he had, he hid very well.
We are just entering the centenary year of the birth of Eric Morecambe, and we must touch on your appearance with Morecambe and Wise. Everybody, but everybody was trying to get on with them. You were lucky to have spent that time with them. What was it like?
It was great. We spent about 2 weeks rehearsing, which was super fun. Eric always so pleasant, so fun, so nice, and just a wonderful wee show to do. I did Misty, look at me, I'm as helpless as a kitten up a tree, and then I was their hillbilly sister, so it was really quite fun, you know. And finally I'm in the bath with a towel wrapped round me, hiding or anything that might be remotely offensive to Mary Whitehouse, who was always on the watch those days. So that was great fun. I did enjoy it. And Ernie, they were both extremely nice. And then afterwards, when I was doing a series called The Saturday Show for Children on Central, they were desperate to get Eric on, and he wasn't coming. And anyway, I thought I would ask him, and I did ask him, and then he came. So that gave me a big brownie point. And we had a great show with him. He was absolutely wonderful, really wonderful. So happy days with him. And one time we went to a premiere thing, you know, often they'd invite celebrities of the day, and they, Morecambe and Wise, were there, and I went along, and I arrived, and I'd come in a leather skirt and a leather jacket. And then he said, I didn't know you had to come as a wallet.
Isla, let's go right back to the beginning, having had that little soiree into the generation game and entertainment of the 70s and 80s. You were born in Scotland, but you actually originally were only there for 3 years before you moved down to Crewe.
I was born in Grangemouth, which is very near to Edinburgh, you know, where the industrial area. And I was only there for about 5 months, and we moved up to Finnochty, as it's called in the local area, the local Dorrick, because my mother's family were all from there, from near there, from Buckie, which is just very near to Finnochty. And so I spent just a few months there up to Findochty, and then I was there until 1956 March, and we moved down to England. My mother was a single mother at this point, which was very difficult in those times, extremely difficult. And we moved down and with my brother and sister. And finally, after a few months of great difficulties living in Crewe, we did manage to get a wee council house in a little hamlet called Bradfield Green. Moving to England, of course, at that age meant I quickly adopted a broad Cheshire accent. You know, right, wee monkey, and I'll have a chip butty and all of that. And so when returning to Aberdeen when in 1960, it was quite difficult, you know, because I'd loved living in a little hamlet in England with Mabel and Mrs. Fleet at the wee shoppy, and the little school I attended and all of that. And it was going back to Aberdeen, which was very cold, a very, very cold place. And of course, talking in with the accent I had, it was very, very difficult.
Music played a big part in your life early on. You've already said that you were singing from a very young age. Had you come from a musical family?
Absolutely. My mother, a lovely, beautiful singer, actually, very high, pure voice, always singing, always composing tunes, composing poetry. She was the one who was telling the stories and singing the songs when I was very, very young. And as it transpired in later, much later years, I was to find out that my real father, my biological father, actually had a wonderful voice as well. So I think I got a double whammy of whatever comes down the genetic singing area.
You were encouraged with your singing by family and your schools as well?
Not well. We did sing in the playground. Not so much in England, but when I went back to Scotland in 1960, the playgrounds were alive with song, you know, little children's songs. The sort of thing you play ball games and skipping games to, you know, I'm a bow-legged chicken, I'm a knock-kneed sparrow, I missed my bus, so I went by a barra, I went to a cafe for my dinner and my tea, I ate so many sausages, pardon me, etc. And you would do these little ball games, you'd do these little round games, skipping games, and it was such a rich heritage, actually, and a very important part of our culture. In England, not so much, but I used to go up to the wee church, the Congregational Church up the road, which we loved, and there was lots of singing there, so that was good. And as I say, my mother encouraging it and singing herself all day in the house, and I would sing very loudly, I'm told. So my sister says, you are very voluble. Oh, okay. But Mum was really the driving force, and if we did have a little occasion, something nice, you know, something to celebrate, my brother, sister and I and Mum, we would all get together and all sing. So we would sing folk songs and Harry Belafonte songs or whatever songs were popular at the time. My brother playing guitar, my sister doing the low harmony, myself the melody. I always carried the melody and my mother high harmony. It was very, very nice way to spend a few hours.
Well, as the consummate professional, you have brought us right onto your new album. It's called Kids Stuff. This isn't the first time you've put children's music onto disc or onto the streaming platforms, but this has got a very fresh sound to it.
Ah, yes, this is different. We did some things before with my partner. We did a record called My Generation, which is also good fun. But this time, I particularly wanted to do the songs that I loved when I was young and that I sang to my own two sons. The ones that I really, really loved. And I thought, this is a gift. Because a gift for my first grandchild, who was born just about 14 months ago. So this is a gift for Rory. And because I thought, what can I give him that he hasn't kind of got? So I thought, the songs, of course. So that's what I've done. And it kind of grew a bit. It was definitely organic. And it was a lot of fun to make. Oh, my goodness, this was great fun to do. I kept coming up with other wee ideas, which was really great for me because I've never been in the producer's seat, and this time I was. And I wish I'd done this 30, 40 years ago. It's so much fun creating things. It's so much fun. I would change. That's one thing I would change. I would definitely see myself doing much more production and, you know, being in charge, if you like, because it's it just didn't happen very much in my time. It was always blokes doing it, and you just went along with it. And it was the confidence also to do it, you know, as well. Well, you need finance as well, of course. But anyway, all great fun. Managed it and just love it. I just love doing it. It's been great fun. Then I thought, well, while I'm doing it, as Rory is well looked after and has a lovely family, etc., there's lots of bairnies, wee ones, who do not have families anything very much, and maybe this could help them, and it's a kind of legacy for him. So if we can, children like it and they like listening to it, and the mummies, the grannies, the great grannies like getting it for their children, then hopefully we can be helping other children through Save the Children. I thought that would be the ideal charity, because they are at home and they're abroad and they're for the young, and that's where our hope must lie, in the young and for the future.
The playlist of the album itself, there's some wonderfuls on here, absolute classics. We've got There Was an Old Lady Who Swallowed a Fly, one of the very first songs I can remember ever singing with my mother, Teddy Bear's Picnic, Puff the Magic Dragon. But there's also songs that reflect your childhood, particularly I love A Highland Lullaby. That's a gorgeous sound, which brings in a lot of your Scottish heritage.
That's written by my mother. She wrote quite a number of songs, and she won various competitions through the folk song circles that we were, you know, attending. In fact, it was my mum who took me to the Aberdeen Folk Club when I was just, it was 4 days before I was 11. And this was a very important thing to me. I was nearly 11, not 10. Anyway, and that's where I started singing, to an audience publicly, if you like. And it was, she would write songs as well as singing them. And this is one of her lullabies. And it really is. It is beautiful, actually. The words, she had just a real talent with words. Very proud of her talents and abilities. Zeta Sinclair. She had an unusual name.
We will finish in a few moments' time with a Highland lullaby, because I think there's no better way of rounding up our conversation and paying tribute to you and your mum and Scotland, of course. But before we do that, before we give our listeners information on how they can hear your album, what's in the pipeline at the moment, Isla?
Well, this, I'm going to promote this as best I can, because the royalties that would have come to me will go to Save the Children. So the more I can get, it's a kind of like a competition for myself now to see how I can do to see what we can get together for the charity. You know, that'll be rewarding in itself. And it's kind of fun to do. I like to do this. This is something nice to do, something nice. And I must get this other traditional album done, because I've recorded many of the songs now. I want to get that finished and done. And that's, well, it's basically done, but I just have to produce it now. And so I'll get that one done. And then I shall write funny stories. There are a lot of very funny stories, and I'm going to write them because they are good. And whether or not I produce a book, they could be used as fodder for something else. I'm sure of it. I am sure of it.
Will you come back on in the future and tell us about those projects and how they go?
Love to. That would be great. That would be great, Andrew.
The important bit then, the business end, Isla, how can our listeners listen to your music and most importantly, donate that wonderful money to Save the Children?
Oh, well, all they do is just download or stream the music. Simple as that. That's all they have to do. And just, you know, but if they want to do more, they can go directly to Save the Children and donate more money. But by doing that, the royalties would be collected and then sent to Save the Children. So that's so when they do that, and the main thing is, Andrew, we've got to make sure the children love these songs. I hope they will. That's what I'm going to try and find out. I'm going to do a little recce around some preschools. I'm going to see what the children think. Yes or no? Yes or no?
We will play them on the programme and we will start very shortly with a Highland lullaby. Isla St. Clair, it's been an absolute pleasure. We've had so many memories that we've discussed today, and on behalf of people of my generation, thank you for that wonderful entertainment that you gave us back in the 70s and 80s when the world was slightly different.
Ooh, I think it was a more innocent world then. Well, certainly it was. It's been great fun to come on. There's nothing better than talking about yourself.
Isla St. Clair, thank you so much indeed. And if it's not too late, a Happy New Year.
Oh, Happy New Year to you too. Yes, it's not too late. It's never too late.
Sleep warm in your crib.
The album is called Kid Stuff. It's from Isla St. Clair and it's available to download, with all monies raised going to Save the Children.